Fantasy Blueprint with Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell. I'm joined today by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going today?
It's going well, man. I mean, just to fill everybody in and pull the curtain back a little bit, we haven't been pumping out podcasts like we plan on doing. You know, you were on vacation for a while. I was on vacation for a long while. A couple other things floating around, but hopefully we'll start to do these a little more regularly. We got, a couple weeks until the draft. We're going to line up some guests who are draft experts, you know, and at some point we're going to really, I would think, and you and I haven't talked about this, but I pretty much think from here on out, we really need to start talking about the prospects after today. And today's going to be kind of a unique show, and then maybe you can explain it to people.
Sure. Today we're actually going to take some listener questions. We've got a ton of great questions from you guys via Twitter. So we're going to cover a lot of different topics today, but Matt, you're right. From here on, it'll really be focusing heavy on the incoming rookie class. We do have some great guests lined up for the next couple of weeks, and we appreciate all of our listeners sticking with us during this short hiatus that we dealt with. We had some real life things pop up, but yeah, like Matt said, we're back and ready to get back in our routine.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty excited about it. And then when we're done here, I'm off to a real good dinner. Today's my 18th anniversary, so. Big news there.
All right. Congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to jump into these listener questions. And our first one is an interesting one. I think I kind of know your answer on this already, Matt, but we'll see exactly what you have to say. Jonathan says, what are your thoughts on buying players with picks instead of risking high bust rate? Specifically in this year, I think the answer might be different for this year versus a typical year on this question. Why don't you go ahead and give your answer and let us know if it differs for this year only or what your normal thought would be on flipping picks for players.
Well, before I answer it, I'm not exactly sure what he's asking. I mean, is he asking, you know, I want to go get whoever, X player. I want Devontae Freeman. Is he saying, are you worried about using picks to do that? Or is he saying, I'm not exactly sure what he's asking me.
So the way I read the question is, you know, in any rookie pick, whether you're talking an early first round pick or third or fourth round flyer, you know, there's a bust right there with any rookie, just the unknown of, you know, what role will he play in the NFL and can those skills translate? Will he be able to, have the same success we saw from that player in college. So any rookie pick has a somewhat high bust rate. So would you rather take a chance on that rookie that we are not sure what we might get, or would you rather go get a proven player with those picks through a trade?
My thoughts are, and I think we said this in the first Dynasty Blueprint ever, that a pick in my hands or a pick in your hands is more valuable and has a less bust rate than the guy in my Legends League who just posted, why are you guys sending me trades? It's baseball season. You know, which just makes me shake my head and, you know, makes me lose my mind. But anyways, I don't, you know, picking my hand is valuable. I'm going to hit on it. And if you guys listen to this show on and on, you're going to hit on it too. I mean, we're going to get you guys in position to draft the right players. But in this particular draft class, I'm dumping a lot of my picks. You know, people value them more than I do. I'm finding that, you know, consistently. So I have no problem whatsoever of, yeah, I'll move a bunch of picks for players I like. They have to be the right guys, of course. I don't see that as a major risk. And, of course, you know, you're monitoring that draft too. It doesn't mean, even if I have zero picks in this upcoming draft, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to watch who's falling. And if Jonathan Williams, a running back I really like, if he starts falling to the point where, wow, I can't believe he's still out there, I'm going to call that owner up and say, who do you like off my team? Or what can I get to get back in? And, you know, along those lines, though, those 2017 firsts that we always talk about, I'm not moving them. I mean, someone would have to absolutely blow me away to pry them out of my hands right now. And I've got a lot.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I do think the answer is a little bit different this year, especially as we near the draft. But as far as trading picks for players, for me, it's really dependent on the player. I mean, I'm not selling picks at all costs, even in a year that might be viewed as a down year, like like this one. And I would also say the closer you get to the to your league's rookie draft, the more valuable those picks are. And that's, you know, that's almost 100% true. You know, that's true in almost every case that those picks gain value. You can get more for the 1.08 rookie pick, you know, in 3 weeks than you can today. I feel pretty confident in saying that. So if you are looking to sell picks, I would wait as long as possible as your rookie draft nears.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And like those guys in my league that don't take it as seriously as you and I do, they're just starting to come around on, oh, this Ezekiel Elliott guy is pretty good. You know, they're starting to do their homework now.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to know your league. And if you have a league that's less active like that, then, you know, you're feeding on those 2017 first. You're just loading up while everybody else tries to play catch up.
No question.
All right, so Mark's wondering about a player that a lot of the dynasty world is talking about, is concerned about, Josh Gordon. He says, is Josh Gordon's value declining? If so, by how much? And he throws out a mid-2016 second-round rookie pick as a possible trade. So over the past couple weeks, you know, I think we're all getting a little antsy when it comes to Josh Gordon and his reinstatement. We've seen a couple of reports saying that Roger Goodell has complete control of this situation, that there's no certain rule that says if Gordon does this, he gets to return to the league. It's totally up to the commissioner and his decision. And that's worrying people a little bit. It seems like, at least in the Twitter dynasty community, there is growing concern that Gordon is not going to get reinstated. Maybe the commissioner is trying to make a point with him. Maybe he simply doesn't want, you know, this quote unquote troublemaker in the league. I think Gordon's value is certainly declining as that concern grows. And as time goes on, you know, every day that passes and we don't hear positive news about the reinstatement, his value is dropping. I would not take, if I'm selling him, and I actually am trying to sell him in one league, I would not take a second round rookie pick quite yet. I'm hanging on to him if that's my option.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, if you remember in Hyperactive 2, we had dispersal draft with three teams. I drafted him, quickly sent him to Matt Waldman for his 17 first and some spare change. I think there was a third in there, or a player I liked, or something along those lines. I'm happy about that move now. I think, you know, it's here we sit on 4-9. How about my anniversary is on 4-9, 49ers. I can never forget it. So I get in huge trouble if I forget it. Anyways, if somebody has Gordon, like apparently you do, you've sat on him this whole year. You're not going to sell him for peanuts yet. I mean, something bad would have to come out definitive to move him for 2-4 or 2-3. But, I mean, I'm curious at this point, and we are reading things like, it's not a done deal that he's even going to come back. And he goes to a pretty bad situation. And the last we saw him, he wasn't tearing it up either. I mean, I think we got to remember that too. The latest tape on Gordon isn't good, and he hasn't played in a long time, and he could get in trouble again. So if I offered you this second, a random 2017 first for Gordon, are you moving him?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think at this point I'm taking any first round pick for him, certainly any 2017 first rounder. And, you know, we've talked a lot about that class. We'll talk more about that class today, but yeah, I'm moving him for any 17 first rounder. I saw him traded in one of the hyperactive leagues, I guess about a week ago, for the 1-9 and the 2-9 in this year's class.
And you'd take that as a Gordon owner right this second, right?
Yeah, I would take that as well.
But you wouldn't pay it?
No, I mean, I'm just not buying Gordon.
And as much as I love receivers, okay, say I trade Gordon to Waldman and Gordon goes off and has 1,400 yards this year, I probably still have five other receivers I really like. I mean, they're not hard to come by, and I know we're, you know, that's building blocks of your dynasty team, but if I have Devontae Parker and, you know, four other guys that I really like, I mean, okay, I can live with that mistake.
Yeah, I think the upside is not on Gordon's side right now. I think the upside is in selling him, especially if you're getting a first-round rookie pick.
Yeah.
So as the questions came in from our listeners, I started to notice some themes, which gives us great information for what the audience and what the community wants to hear more about. There were several questions, Matt, about super flex leagues and two quarterback dynasty leagues. So I'm not sure if you play in any of these type of leagues. I've started over the past few years the kitchen sink leagues, which I talk a lot about. There's four of those now, and those are super flex leagues. So obviously giving some added value to the quarterback position. Have you done any super flex leagues?
I haven't. And of course I'm always asked these questions, and to be very honest, I'm going to defer to you on this. I am very interested because one of my pet peeves about fantasy football is the most important position in all of sports isn't all that important in fantasy football. So I like this idea to make quarterback more important because quarterbacks make the NFL go round. So I'm curious what you have to say on this, because, you know, how valuable is Kirk Cousins? How valuable is Ryan Fitzpatrick? You know, I mean, guys that are, you know, that you can get pretty darn cheap in a regular dynasty format.
So some of our questions, and again, we got multiple questions on this topic. How early would you draft a quarterback in a super flex league with 4 points, 4 point touchdowns? Anybody specifically to target after the top three? Luck. He mentions Luck, Cam, and Wilson. I'm assuming Aaron Rodgers would be in that group as well.
Sure.
And then someone else just says, curious how your ranks would fluctuate in a two quarterback league.
I want to add one question to you as well. Let's say Carson Wentz goes second overall to the Browns in a rookie format, in, you know, a rookie super flex format. Is he a top five or six pick in your rookie draft then?
Actually, somebody, one of our listeners mentioned something similar, asking about the draft range of Goff, Wentz, and Lynch in a super flex. So we had all those covered. You know, I see this discussed a lot, and I don't think, well, first of all, you know, there's no inexact science there that every quarterback would get, you know, moved up the ranks or up the ADP by X percent, but it's a lot. It's a lot. So, I mean, if you think about that top tier of quarterbacks, Luck, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, some people have Russell Wilson in there, you may or may not, but I would say Luck, Cam, and Rodgers become top five players overall, you know, in a two quarterback dynasty league, or even in a super flex dynasty league.
So you would trade Odell for Luck? Or strongly,
I don't
consider it if you're really needy.
Yeah. I mean, that's a trade you might see.
Okay.
Or, you know, one of those top quarterbacks, you know, even up for a Beckham or Hopkins or, you know, Todd Gurley or something mm-hmm. like that. So those three or four quarterbacks become part of that conversation of that top tier of dynasty player overall. And the great news there is that just makes the top tier even larger, you know? So if you're doing a startup, a two quarterback startup or a super flex startup, and you're in a middle first round pick, maybe, then even if you miss on those quarterbacks, you might get DeAndre Hopkins in the middle of the first round, where in every other league, he's going 1-1, 1-2, or 1-3, something like that. And then you can come back in the second round and still get a great player, maybe even like Russell Wilson, for example.
That is pretty cool that it's not taking away from the top tier, you know, like all of a sudden nobody wants Mike Adams or Mike Evans or Alshon Jeffrey, but it's really just expanding that top tier.
Exactly. It's expanding the top tier. It's expanding the second tier,
right,
with, you know, with guys like Roethlisberger and Mariota, Jameis Winston. I'm actually looking at the two quarterback rankings over at Dynasty League Football right now. So Andrew Luck is the number one overall player. We've got five different riders doing that, and he's the number one overall player. Cam Newton is second. Aaron Rodgers is fourth. And then you drop down, Russell Wilson is at 16th. So you see some, you know, you see the other position players start to creep in there and kind of maintain their value as compared to other leagues.
And I would guess that, especially in a two quarterback league as opposed to a super flex league, where if you're one of those guys that's holding four NFL starters by chance or three really good ones, somebody in your league is starting Fitzpatrick, you know, somebody bad. You know, I would think once in a while you can really get a guy in a bind where he's going to pay through the nose for a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I think so. And it seems like, and maybe this is just my perception, but it seems like there's a lot more trades in the kitchen sink leagues. And again, that's just my experience. Those are the super flex leagues I play in. But it seems like there's a lot more trades in those leagues than in some of my other leagues. And I think that's why, because that quarterback position has added value to it inherently through the scoring system.
And I would also think that you actually have to pay a little more attention to bye weeks with quarterbacks. Or, you know, if I got a quarterback on a bye and I got another one that got hurt, all of a sudden in week six, I'm going to bind. I got nobody to start.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're definitely looking ahead. You'll see plenty of backup quarterbacks rostered, mm-hmm. Whether they're, you know.
Mike Glennon and.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
Young guys who you know, maybe haven't even taken a snap yet. Or the, you know, I've seen like Matt Hasselbeck was rostered in some of the kitchen sink leagues the past couple of years. And you know, that paid off somewhat as he got some playing time.
So I would think handcuffs are even more important. I mean, if you have Luck last year, it's pretty nice to have Hasselbeck. I mean, at least you can start somebody.
Yeah. I mean, you haven't, you know, Hasselbeck didn't have a big statistical year at all, but having somebody to fill that spot and if he's getting 10 to 12 points a week, you know, that's helping you out some, at least. You mentioned the rookies, Goff, Wentz, and Lynch. Again, they're just making that top tier even deeper. I'm not sure if Lynch is in there yet. I think he's a little more team dependent. You know, we'll see where he ends up going in the NFL draft. But I think Goff and Wentz make that top tier, you know, six deep instead of four deep, depending on how you're viewing the rookies right now. I mean, personally, I would still take Elliott. I would still take Treadwell over those guys. But once you get to 1-3, then, yeah, I'm looking at a quarterback, especially if they're landing in a decent spot.
I guess a better question to educate me and our listeners that don't know, how about last year's rookie class after Winston goes 1, Mariota goes 2 to the Titans and Bucks? All of a sudden, I mean, they have a defined roles at that point. You pretty much know they're going to start from day one. I would think they would be massive dynasty assets in a rookie draft, although that class was better for receivers and running backs.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. They cracked that top tier for sure. And, I mean, you would see them at times being taken over Gurley and over Cooper.
Wow. Okay. Over White. And
Right. And, you know, again, they were in the top tier. So sometimes you would see Winston going first overall. Sometimes he would fall to third or fourth, you know, just based on owner preferences. So here's an interesting question. I had to think a long time on this one. I'm not sure I still have a good answer. What two things would you tell your past self when you were starting to play Dynasty? So other than go buy Odell Beckham as cheap as you can, what are some lessons you've learned, some things you wish you knew as soon as you were starting to play?
One of them for sure is I hadn't really listened to anyone's advice when I started playing Dynasty, and I figured, hey, I'm an ESPN analyst. I know what I'm doing. I'll be smarter than everybody. And I thought that young running backs made the world go round, but they don't stay young long enough. You know what I mean? Like, I thought a first or second year guy was gold, and I would start this guy for the next 8 years, and he'd be Adrian Peterson, and I would dominate this league forever. Well, they don't last, you know, and therefore I found myself weak at receiver. And since then, I've changed my tune. And as everyone knows, I build on the Devontae Parkers of the world as opposed to the Jay Ajayis for Miami.
Yeah, I would say one of mine would be similar to that. Just I've talked about it on here before that when I started playing Dynasty, it was all about the running back position for everybody. You would do a startup draft and 11 out of the first 12 picks were running backs. And you know, in the first round, for example. And I would probably take four running backs in the first four rounds before I would even look at other positions. So I guess knowing how that would change so quickly would have been some helpful information, build around those wide receivers and maybe get ahead of the curve there. I don't know. That's a tough question, though. I'm sure there's some lessons I've learned on trading and trade strategy that, you know, that would have been helpful over the years. I really like to do what I call consolidation deals, you know, trading 2 and 3 players for one.
That roster spot's important.
Yeah, you gain those roster spots. You're upgrading your starting lineup. You know, that's kind of an obvious thing, but something that took me a little while to figure out could really work. There's probably a lot of things, clearly a lot of things that I've learned the hard way over the years, but none are really coming to mind right now. That's a great question.
One mistake I made, the first Dynasty League I ever joined, I got, you know, I took over a bad team and I started to build it up and thought I was close to being a contender. And the mistake I made 2 or 3 times in that league was I'm one player away. I'm going to give up 5 picks or something to go get this one guy who I think is going to have a monster year and he's young. Well, one of them was Cordarrelle Patterson. One of them was Monte Ball. you know, and one was Antonio Brown. So that's kind of the lesson, is if you go all in on a guy, you can't miss.
Yeah, those are lessons learned the hard way for sure. Would you advise, you know, not to go all in that situation? Or is that more of a player evaluation that backfired on you?
I think I don't hesitate. Well, I think I would hesitate more to go all in on one guy now. You know, I think it's more slow and steady wins the race. I'm going to keep adding pieces, and those pieces are going to turn into gems, as opposed to I'm going to land a whale and give a lot up for
them. Okay. All right. That makes sense. So here's back to the rookie draft talk. Here's another question. This guy has the 1.01 pick. He wants interested in what's the price tag of that? Should he be shopping the pick, or should he just keep the pick? And if so, is that Ezekiel Elliott? I'll let you start on this one, Matt.
We agree it's Elliott, right? No matter what, I think at this point. Well, I at least do.
Yeah, I think so. I've been I don't know. I've been really hesitant to go away from Laquan Treadwell at 1.01. You know, he's been my number one Devy player for 2 years now. You know, he had the leg injury. He kind of got off to a slow start his junior year, possibly because of that. You know, the offseason has not been kind to him. He didn't run that fast. He didn't do much at the combine, while Elliott has been wowing everybody and has, you know, bypassed him as the consensus 1.01. So I don't have the 1.01 pick in any league. I'm not doing any startup drafts this year. You know, I don't really have that choice to make. And maybe that makes it easy for me to say that I still like Treadwell a lot. I do think Elliott is the pick because that's what 90% of the community thinks. And what I mean by that is if I still like Treadwell, or if I think it's even close, then I'm trying to move down from 1-1 to 1-2, pick up a little extra, and I'm happy either way.
I hear you.
So as the gap in value or perceived value widens between Elliott and Treadwell, the demand for your 1-1 is only going to increase. So, you know, 3 months ago, you land the 1-1, the fantasy season's over, and, you know, maybe that pick is not as valuable as you would like it to be, because the guy with 1.02 is happy to have either one. So that's still my opinion. I'm happy to have Elliott or Treadwell. They're still very close for me. And if I have the 1-1, I'm trying to move down and gain some additional value. And I'm happy having either one of those guys. So that's kind of a long worded way to say, yes, I would be shopping the pick. I would try to move down to 1.02, but, you know, if you just want to move straight out of that, I think, you know, Elliott's being drafted as the 20th overall player in our ADP mock drafts. So he's already got some big time standalone value. You can flip him, you know, you can probably flip that for like a Brandon Cooks. You can flip that for, you know, maybe even Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, you can get a big time player for that 1.01 pick.
Yeah, here's my situation, and you may remember, I mean, a couple episodes ago, I made that Mike Evans trade, and I got 1.1 in as part of the deal. Well, that was in Hyperactive 4, which, you know, you brought me in, 2 or 3 years ago, and as an expansion team, I've been a very bad team, And that might be the best team building I've ever done. That team's loaded right now, and I'm knocking on the door about ready to be a contender. Losing Evans doesn't hurt my receiving core. That tells you enough about what I got over there. And last year, I earned the 1.01 as the worst team in the league, and I took Gurley. So I could take Elliott and Gurley in back-to-back years and be pretty loaded everywhere else. That's pretty enticing. But what the way I've handled that over there is I haven't made any offers offering 1-1, but I put 1-1 on the trade block, so you know, and just kind of dangled it out there. No one's bit. I've been wanting to see if somebody else will set the market, and I think that is one of the cases where I bet somebody does in the next couple of weeks. As we get closer to the draft, somebody will say, boy, I really want 1-1. Who's got him? Williamson's got him. I'm going to go give him a call, see what he has to say. And I'll certainly listen. You know, again, I mean, I don't want my best assets to be at the running back position, although having Elliott and Gurley wouldn't be so terrible. So I'm all ears. And lastly, we haven't been pumping out Dynasty Blueprints lately, but in the meantime, I've done a lot more draft homework. And I think you're on board with this just from what you said, too. To me, it's not even close that Treadwell's the number one receiver. I mean, to me, I'm a big Treadwell fan. I like him a lot more now than I did then. And he's clearly the only one else I would consider at 1-1.
I would agree with that as well, but I'm not sure if that's what we're seeing from the Dynasty community. And I think it's important. Yeah. I think it's important to be plugged in. You know, you've got to know your evaluation of players, but then you've got to know everybody else's too. And whether that's, you know, the Twitter community or if that's specific to your league, that information can help you. So I think what we're seeing over the past month or so is the 1-1 is gaining value. You know, it's locked in that it's Elliott and everything's looking great for him. You know, there's Dallas Cowboy talk, you know, and if he were to go 4 overall to Dallas and, you know, Alfred Morris is not a concern there at all. He's a nice running back if you have him on your roster, but if Elliott goes there, you know, it's full steam ahead that he's the 1-1. I think the 1-3 and 1-4 are both gaining value. I think that's pretty much viewed as Josh Dotson probably at 3 and Corey Coleman at 4. I think both of those picks are gaining value. So if you have those picks, they're closer in value to the 2 than they were, you know, than they have been any time in the past few weeks or months. I think the 2 is just kind of, you know, just kind of floating out there that, yeah, it's probably Treadwell, but, you know, in some leagues you're going to have somebody who's buying into the Treadwell hate that he ran too slow and he can't separate and, you know, he's just a possession guy and somebody's going to take Dotson, somebody's going to take Coleman, and you might get Treadwell at 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's crazy talk to me. And the one thing I really like you said, too, was I think the majority of Dynasty players right now think there's a large gap from 1-1 to 1-2, from Elliott to probably Treadwell. And if you own 1-1, that might be what you capitalize on, because I don't think you and I believe that. I mean, like you said, I would take Elliott over Treadwell, but Treadwell's pretty good. I mean, he could end up with the Giants. He could end up with the Rams. You know, there's a lot of spots for him to land. And then I guess the last thing to throw at you is, what about Derrick Henry? I mean, to me, he could be the one that messes up that 1-2 through 1-4. What if he ends up with Dallas in round 2?
Yeah, he could. I mean, he could throw things
off. I still don't want him.
Right. He could throw things off.
But right.
Leonte Carew's another guy gaining value. He could, you know, he could crash that top 4 as well. Henry, I think, has a harder path to that top 4. First of all, he's just a running back, and you know, in general, people don't want to build around running backs in their dynasty leagues, even with an early rookie pick. And then there's only, you know, there's only so many spots. Yeah, if he lands with Dallas, he looks great, but I still think like 1-4 is probably his ceiling even then. So I think, you know, I think Henry's probably mid first at best, barring something crazy. Yeah, you know, it's going to be fun. We're going to have a lot of changes over these next few weeks. And once we actually know the landing spots for these players, those draft picks and draft values will begin to solidify. So you mentioned a couple trades you had made. And our next question, actually, we have a couple of questions about trade strategy and just how you approach trades in dynasty leagues. Douglas says, what's the best way to start a trade conversation? do you make a low ball offer or make what you view as your final offer? And do you add, you know, I've seen this quite a bit. Do you add this commentary on why the other owner should accept the trade? What do you think about any of that?
No commentary. Nobody wants to tell, no owner out there wants to hear your opinions. Even if you are an expert and you've got a whole bunch of Twitter followers and they don't want to hear, I just made you this great offer and I'm doing you a favor. This is why you should accept. No. Just send the offer and, you know, I mean, to me, that's and go from there. This one's very dependent on the player you're after, what you're offering. Your league mates absolutely have to know your league mates, because there's some guys in my league that if I lowball them or if I offer them 80% of what I really would pay, they just hit reject and they don't want to hear from me again, you know? So you really have to know that. So I don't really have an answer. I mean, this just takes experience and knowing your league, in my opinion. I'm not a believer in, here, I'm making you an offer as my final offer. I mean, why would I do that? I like to negotiate. I think that's a part of the fun of it. Some people are like, you know, they're not into that. Why would you send me this? If, you know, well, send me a counter. I mean, I'm not expecting you to hit, you know, accept the second I send you something. But one thing that of note that I've noticed lately, a lot of times, like this one league, I have 2-2 and 2-3, and I've been looking for a player or so to send those two picks to get a good young player in return. So in order to do that, you have to include the bottom guy on your roster. And so in the comments section, I always write, Joe Blow's just a throw-in. Well, people yell me, you know, write me back, and they're like, well, I don't want, you know, Vance McDonald. I'm like, well, he only exists so you can hit accept. You know, like, people don't seem to understand that, and that makes me crazy. It's like, I'm not putting any value in him. I'm not asking for less because I threw Vance McDonald in. He's just my worst guy. If I don't include him, you can't hit accept.
Yeah, that's funny. So first of all, I agree on the, you know, the commentary or the sales job. Don't do that. That only makes things worse. I mean, I haven't come across anybody that has worked on. Definitely don't do that.
One thing I do want to mention though is after I've made trades and everybody knows I put it on Twitter, I'll get an email back sometime saying, well, what did Twitter think of our trade?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't happened to me yet, but that, yeah, that's interesting. So as far as a lowball offer, you know, I think intentionally lowballing somebody or sending a lowball offer is not a good way to start trade talks. You know,
a crime.
Right. I mean, I'm not someone who gets offended by bad trade offers. You know, I can just laugh and hit delete or hit reject and move on. But I mean, I do know some people that are just, you know, how could they send that to me? And they get really angry over these bad trade offers. You know, you want to be careful. You don't want to in that line of communication before it's really even started. So I would say somewhere in the middle, as far as you don't want to lowball. I agree with you. You don't, you know, there's no reason to say this is my final offer, you know, take it or leave it. Leave the door open for some negotiation there. And, you know, that's the fun part of trading. Let's look at our next question now. This comes from Andrew, and he says, would you rather have one top 10 overall ADP player on your team, or would you rather diversify, like maybe having three in the top 50? And he mentions an example of having like Amari Cooper versus Hilton and maybe a couple of other players in that range. This one's easy for me. I want the stud. You know, and if I'm trading three top 50 players to get a top five or top 10 player, I'm doing that basically every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, studs make the world go round. You can always manufacture top 50 players by being a good owner and a couple draft classes. I mean, the only time that I would consider it is like in Hyperactive 2. I just took this team over. We had a dispersal draft. I know I'm not going to compete right now. 2 weeks ago, I put Odell Beckham on the trade block just to see if somebody will give me a lot. I mean, a lot. And so that I can fill out the rest of my roster, be, you know, have all kinds of trade power for and have a lot of youth. But basically, I mean, you're going to have to send me your firstborn for him, though.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an easy one. You know, you want to build up and get as many studs as you can. And if you're packaging lesser players to do that, then then that's fine. Even, you know, even if you're trading your wide receiver three and he's starting on your team, but you're getting an Amari Cooper and now you've got to go pick somebody up off the waiver wire to start, I'd still rather do that. You know, I still think that's an improvement overall.
Right. And if Cooper gets hurt, you lose, but so be it.
Right. All right. Here's another question from my buddy Dwayne Brown. And this is the kind of question I love because I'm all about Dynasty ADP. I love studying that and looking at that and thinking about how that can help me build teams. So Dwayne says, let's look ahead to June 2017. How many rookies from the 2017 class will be in the top 36 of Dynasty ADP? So we're talking the top three rounds. How many players, how many rookies from that 2017 class will be in the top 36? So we've talked a lot about the class, you know, this 2017 class, and we've, you know, in just a few shows, we have advised people to buy 2017 picks every chance they get. You know, if you can go get them, do it, stock up and enjoy it a year from now. But how many rookies from next year's class will actually be in those top three rounds?
So just to clarify, these are going to be guys that are not yet drafted. Oh, no, they will be. They'll be with their new teams. Guys like Fournette and whatnot. This will be post 2017 NFL draft.
Right. He said June. So just for a little perspective, we just wrapped up our April ADP mocks over at DLF. And obviously this is pre-draft. We don't know where these players are going to land. And once we know that, their values could change quite a bit. But for now, we have three rookies in the top 36. I mentioned Elliott earlier. He's actually the 18th overall player in our ADP. Mm-hmm. So he's in that mid-second round range. Laquon Treadwell is the 31st overall player, and Josh Dotson is 36. So we've got three 2016 rookies currently in the top 36. How many could crash that top 36 a year from now?
You probably know this better than I do, even though I've been accumulating 17 picks like crazy. You know the Devies and the youngsters, you know, the guys still in college much better than I do. So, but I bet I could come up with 36 dynasty assets that I would take ahead of Dotson. I mean, to me, of this class, I know Elliott would be in my top 36. I bet Treadwell would be borderline, and I can almost positive that that's it for me. That would be, you know, in my top 36 currently. But this new class is a heck of a lot better. My hunch is there's going to be four or five, Fournette and Chubb if he's healthy, and who else?
Yeah, I think four is the number I came up with. So I think one of the things that makes the 2017 class, you know, so appealing to us dynasty players is the depth it carries. We've said, go get these 2017 picks. It's not just first rounders, you know, go ahead and stock up on 2017 second rounders as well, because I think they're going to pay off as well. As far as the top of the class, it's hard to have more than three or four in the top three rounds. You know, typically what you'll see, and this has played out over the years, I've been collecting Dynasty ADP for 4 or 5 years now. And in general, you'll see that top rookie come off in the middle of the second round, depending on, you know, how much difference there is between the top rookie and the second guy. You'll see the second guy come off in the late second round or early third round. And that's what we're seeing this year with Treadwell. And then you'll kind of see the floodgates open. Everybody wants, you know, if they missed out on one of the top guys, they want to make sure they grab a rookie in the fourth or fifth or sixth round. So, and that's exactly what we're seeing this year. Yeah. So for next year's group, you mentioned Chubb and Fournette, the two running backs, Juju Smith-Schuster, the wide receiver from USC. I expect him to be in that top 36 as well. And then Dalvin Cook is the Florida State running back. I think he could be the fourth to crack that top 36 a year from now. Now, with that said, if you want to expand that to the top 50 or the top 60, you know, I think that's where you're really going to see the difference in how deep that 2017 class is.
That's awesome. You know, I mean, that these are all the things I've heard. I don't have a legit opinion on it yet. I mean, those are the names I know as well, but I mean, that's really appealing. And the other thing is, just from our experience, if you did this, what, a year ago, nobody would be mentioning Kevin White. You know what I mean? Like, somebody else that we've never even heard of is going to pop up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Kevin White a year back would have been, you know, viewed as a surprise. And, I mean, even guys like Josh Dotson, he was certainly right on the radar. I mean, I'm in Devy leagues where he was drafted. I actually have him in one league where I acquired him a year ago in our Devy auction. So he was on the radar, but he wasn't viewed like this. So Dotson's gained value. Sterling Shepard's gained a ton of value. Even Corey Coleman has gained a lot of value over the year. We're going to see somebody like that, you know, for 2017 as well. Somebody's going to come out of nowhere and really surprise us. Our next question, again, has to do with rookies, but there are 2016 rookies. Some players in the third or fourth round that you would be eyeing. Not the Elliotts, Treadwells, Corey Coleman range, but third or fourth round rookie picks that you might be trying to scoop up. You have anybody in mind?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, there's some guys that are growing on me, and there's some Matt Waldman favorites that I've paid attention to, and I'll list some of these guys that are appealing, you know, that area of a rookie draft. And generally at that stage, I'm just trying to load up on running backs as just a way of doing business, you know, because who knows? I mean, that could be Thomas Rawls, like Bloom said in our first one, you know, that they just kind of something breaks right and you end up having a guy on the cheap that is a good player that's buried on a depth chart somewhere and he plays. But more than that, as I've made these teams my own, I rarely have room for third and fourth rounders anymore. So I'm dumping those picks left and right because I don't want to cut somebody I like.
Yeah, and that goes back to the value of those roster spots and making those consolidation trades can help that. Yeah, there's a few guys I'm looking at. I'm actually looking at our rankings over at DLF right now, the third and fourth round range. So we're talking anybody outside of the top 24. Rashard Higgins is a wide receiver from Colorado State. He's our 25th ranked rookie right now. Kind of a slim guy. He's under 200, so would like to see him put on some weight. But in the third round, yeah, I'm taking a chance on him. Keith Marshall, the running back from Georgia, we've talked about him on here before. Blew the combine away with, I think he ran a 4.31. He's in that third round range.
For now. I could see him warming up, though.
Yeah, yeah. A couple wide receivers, Sherron Peak, Clemson kid. You know, I've just become addicted to Clemson wide receivers. So anything they put out, I'm interested. He's a guy that seems to be gaining some value. And that's really where you're going to be able to grab one of the quarterbacks. You know, even even Wentz or Goff could fall to the third round range of rookie picks.
The one name I wanted to mention, and I've talked about him a little bit before, and Waldman's the one that, you know, made me realize about the guy when I started reading this rookie scouting portfolio, but Peyton Barber from Auburn, and I went back and watched his tape after. I think he can be a real fantasy force for you, that if he goes in the sixth or seventh round of the NFL draft, or maybe even undrafted, who knows, or, you know, ends up in a – I don't care even where he ends up, but I think he's got a chance to be a pretty quality back.
Yeah, even with some – Matt Waldman love, he's still pretty off the radar.
Yeah.
Didn't do much at Auburn until last year and had a pretty good season. Matt obviously saw some things he likes, and when it comes to that, I'll defer to him for the most part. Barber is a guy who's kind of gaining some traction, and if he's there in the third round, definitely. And I do agree with you with drafting running backs in the second and third round. You know, if I'm doing a startup, I'm ignoring running backs. We'll actually talk about that in just a moment.
Yeah.
For the most part, I'm ignoring running backs. I'm building around wide receivers and getting a young stud quarterback. And so, yeah, when it comes to that rookie draft, that's where I'm going to acquire running backs. And I'm taking a shot on those guys in the rookie draft.
And if you cut them, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, if it ends up being roster fodder for you a couple months from now, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. So that leads us to our next question. Will says he's drafting for year two in a startup. Which mid-round running backs should he value and after he's loaded up at wide receiver early? So this goes back to some dynasty startup strategy. It's what I call the productive struggle. Some people would call it punting running back. Basically, like I mentioned, you're just ignoring the running back position. You're building your team around wide receiver. Your first five or six or seven picks might be wide receivers, and you're just almost ignoring the running back position altogether. So once you get to the 10th, 11th, 12th round, who are some running backs that you might take?
Well, I very much believe in this strategy, first of all. And it's hard to actually start naming names, but you don't want to get caught in the Jonathan Stewart, Frank Gore guys that, you know, that fall because of age, because they might make you good in round in year one. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, not good enough to contend, but too good that you're not picking in the top two or three of the next year. And I'm not saying tank it. You don't go week to week and don't start your best guys. But I don't think you want the Frank Gores of the world on a team like this, no matter how late they fall in the draft, unless your plan is I sell them to a contender for a draft pick down the road. And that's fine. I guess more like the McKinnons of the world, guys that are stuck in a tough situation that could change teams.
So I kind of can see both sides of this. I wrote the Productive Struggle article a couple of years ago. It's been well received, and it's a strategy that I've used many times over the years. It's worked well. Basically, I stink it up in year one, but I've got a ton of good wide receivers. I end up with a 101 or 102 rookie pick. I can add another, you know, potential stud to my team, and now I'm ready to compete. So that's kind of the 10-cent version of the strategy, and it's worked really well. Now, with that said, as more and more people start to build around wide receivers and ignore running backs, guys like Frank Gore and Jonathan Stewart are falling to 10th, 12th, 15th round. So if you can go ahead and grab those guys, you've already got your young wide receivers. The only difference is you probably are going to win some games, maybe even make a playoff spot or compete for a championship. Do you do that rather than get that early rookie pick? So, like I said, I can see the benefits of both sides here. Will mentioned he's strictly playing for year two. So if that's the case, I agree with you. Jerick McKinnon is a good target. Theo Riddick, I like.
Yeah.
Charles Sims, Charcandrick West. You've mentioned in the past that maybe maybe this is Jamaal Charles' last season in Kansas City. So West would be a guy I would target. Pretty much, I would say any young running back that might hit, you know, Tevin Coleman, we've talked about on here before. Any young running back that could hit and gain some value. And if he doesn't hit, no big deal. You're still going to struggle. You're still going to get an early round rookie pick or an early rookie pick, and you'll be ready to compete in year two.
And one thing to do along those lines, too, is be proactive and look at who are the running backs that are going to be free agents after this year. And either go get that guy if he's coming off his first contract, doesn't have a lot of tread off of his tires yet, or get the backup who's going to fill in for the Forte from a year ago. You know what I mean? The guy that's going to go somewhere else, that somebody's going to fill those shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Again, that's a strategy that can work and has worked really well over the years. It is getting harder because everybody wants to build around wide receivers right now. So that, you know, that wide receiver market is a very competitive one, and you're going to end up reaching for guys in, you know, the third round that might not feel like a great pick. All right, let's take one last question here. This is from Eric, and he's back to the 2017 class. He says, I think we all know about the stud running backs coming out in 2017, but what does the wide receiver class look like? So we've already talked about Juju Smith, the wide receiver from USC. I think he's pretty much cemented, for me at least, as my number one wide receiver. But there's quite a few good wide receivers. A lot of the talk goes to the running backs, but the decision a couple of these players made to go back to school has made the 2017 class even better. So Corey Davis has been one of the top devies for the past year or so. He's a wide receiver from Western Michigan.
A lot of people were disappointed that he didn't come out.
Yeah, exactly. So he chose to go back to school, which was surprising, disappointing for some of us Devy players. But that makes that 2017 class even better. So, and you know, with Juju and Fournette and Chubb, Davis has almost become an afterthought, which makes him, if you are in a Devy league, makes him a great player to try to buy right now. You know, there may be some frustration that, you know, I thought I was going to have this guy for 2016. I've got to wait another year. Go try to buy him. I would say the same thing about Mike Williams, the Clemson kid. He had the neck injury. He missed almost the entire season. There's still, you know, certainly some concern there about how he's healing and is he going to be able to come back full strength. There hasn't been much talk about that, but he is expected back and still has plenty of value. After that, I would say those four, so Davis, Juju, Mike Williams, and then the other guy I didn't mention was Malachi Dupree from LSU. He's also going to be a junior. You know, Fournette gets all the attention, but Dupree's had a good career so far as well. I think those four wide receivers make that 2017 class just that adds to that depth and makes it so enticing.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to learn more about these guys, to be very honest. So good stuff.
Well, thanks for joining us today, and we'll be back next time talking more Dynasty football.